The Rending of the Kingdom, Chapter 83. There is a mountain near Jerusalem called the Mount of Olives. A little later you will hear this name more often. Come, let us go in our thoughts to this Mount of Olives. When we stand on top of this mountain, we are able to see very far in all directions. Before us lies the city of Jerusalem, which has been made so beautiful by David and Solomon. The largest building is the temple, the house of the Lord, which was built by Solomon. The large white stones reflect the bright sunlight. How nice! How beautiful! We see the high wall all around Jerusalem, which must protect the city from the enemy. The gates are open. A path winds downward. In the valley runs a rivulet or a brook. This brook is called Kidron. Many trees grow on the bank of Kidron, and the slope of the mountain is also covered with trees. We see smoke rising between the trees. My, what can that be? Look closely. We see a temple. And from this temple we see the clouds of smoke ascending. Did Solomon build a second temple? In the distance stands another temple, and over there another. Are they all temples for the worship of the Lord? Is the large temple in Jerusalem already too small? No, it is nothing like that. They are idol temples. How is that possible? Yes, children, this is a sad history. As you already know, Solomon was married to the daughter of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. She was his first wife. But he was, sad to say, not satisfied with only one woman. He continually took more wives, until finally he had 1,000. They were not all women of Israel. Oh no, there were many heathen women among them. They were daughters of the kings of the neighboring nations, as Moab, Ammon, and Edom. Yes, he took his wives from everywhere. In those days, men thought this a great honor. The king's power was judged by the number of wives he had. Solomon also agreed with this foolishness. These heathen women worshipped idols, which they would not forsake. They brought with them the heathen worship into Israel. They asked Solomon if he would build a temple for their idols. It need not be a large temple. They would be satisfied with a small one. At first, no doubt, Solomon refused. But when they kept asking, he finally consented. He would not allow them to be built in Jerusalem, but yet they came. And his many wives rejoiced because they had their way. O Solomon, did the Lord increase your riches for that purpose? Must you now misuse the gold which God gave you? Solomon, you are the cause of the idol worship being brought into Israel. Yes, it became even worse. Those are the temples which we see when we stand on top of the Mount of Olives. We now know why they are there. We see a small group of people approaching one of these temples. Solomon is walking foremost. What? Solomon? Does this wise, this intelligent Solomon also go to this temple of an idol? That cannot be. Surely that is not allowed, is it? No, indeed it is not. But still it is so. His wives ask him if he will go with them just once. For a long time they kept asking him, and at last Solomon gave in. Again he consented. Thus we see him walking. He enters one of these temples, in which the horrible idols of wood or stone are standing. When the priests of the idols bring their offerings, and the clouds of smoke ascend, Solomon also bends his knees. How terrible, isn't it? O Solomon, don't you know better? Oh yes, he does know better, but he thinks so much of his wives that he will not displease them. He cannot bear to have them become angry with him, therefore he gives in to them. When he was young, he would bend his knees only before the living God. Now that he is old, for his hair is gray, he also bows before these speechless idols, not with his whole heart, but to please his many wives. Oh yes, certainly he also comes into the temple of the Lord, and bows before the God of heaven and earth. He worships both of them, the Lord and the idols. No, Solomon, that cannot go that way. The Lord alone must have all the honor. It is no wonder that the Lord is enraged with Solomon, for the Lord will not allow himself to be mocked. One day a young man leaves the city of Jerusalem. He is still strong and robust, and he is walking with rapid strides. He breathes the pure air with deep breaths. His forehead is not yet wrinkled because of sorrow. Sorrow? Why, no. This life is still so good for him. He is full of expectations. A gray-haired man is approaching in the distance. Ah, he knows this old man. He is a prophet. They come nearer to each other. Suddenly, the old man stands still. He is clothed with a new garment. Just look. He removes his garment, tears it into 12 pieces, and says, "Now you take 10 of these pieces." Oh, how strange, how odd and peculiar. What is the meaning of all this? Who are these two young men? Who are these two men? The one, the young man, is Jeroboam. He is an Ephrathite, a robust fellow who can work hard. Solomon observed this and thought, "That type of man I can use." He placed Jeroboam as ruler over the men of his tribe. That was a great honor for him. Therefore it is no wonder that he was so glad and cheerful when he left Jerusalem. The other gray-haired man is Ahijah the prophet. Ahijah has a message for Jeroboam, a message from the Lord, which is this: later, after Solomon dies, he would become king. For that reason, Ahijah tears his garment into 12 pieces. Each piece signifies one tribe, because Israel is divided into 12 tribes. Jeroboam shall become king over 10 tribes, and the son of Solomon may keep 2 tribes. 2 tribes shall remain with the house of David. But remember this, warns Ahijah, this shall happen only after the death of Solomon. Therefore, be silent about it. Children, that was the punishment of the Lord upon the idolatry of Solomon. The kingdom of Israel shall be divided into 2, and Jeroboam would become king over the greatest portion. Then Ahijah walks away, and Jeroboam in deep thought continues his journey. But Jeroboam could not keep this to himself. It seems as though he spoke to others about it, because Solomon also hears of it. Solomon already knew that this would happen, for the Lord had made it known to him, but the Lord did not tell him who it would be. But now he hears that Jeroboam shall become king. Therefore, he makes an effort to kill Jeroboam. Jeroboam must flee for his life. He flees to Egypt, and Pharaoh helps him. He is allowed to remain in Egypt. Solomon's life comes to an end. At the end of his life, he had much grief. Many men from different countries became his enemies and tried to oppose him. All that was his own fault. Still, Solomon did not die as an idolater, for the Lord took care of that. Toward the end of his life, he repented because of his idolatry. He could not die as an idolater, because already in his youth, the Lord had given Solomon a new heart. Certainly, he forsook the Lord, but the Lord again brought him back. When he died, he entered into eternal glory. Then he became an inhabitant of that heavenly Jerusalem, the city of the heavenly Prince of Peace. He was king for 40 years. At the end of his life, he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. If you will read this book, you will notice how he truly mourned over his foolish idolatry. Now that Solomon has died, a new king must reign. When Solomon was anointed king, the entire city rejoiced so loudly that the earth rent. Now the son of Solomon becomes king. His name is Rehoboam. But the inhabitants of Jerusalem are not glad. There is no sound of rejoicing. Nothing out of the ordinary is to be seen. It is quiet and peaceful in the capital. One day a chariot rides through the gate of the city. In that chariot stands Rehoboam. He looks very serious. He is going to Shechem, a city which lies in the tribe of Ephraim. What must he do there? Let us go with him and see. When he rides through the gates of Shechem, many people are there. It is very busy, for thousands of Israelites have gathered together. Rehoboam asks them what they want. Then a young man walks forward and speaks in the name of all the people. He is Jeroboam. Jeroboam? Didn't he flee to Egypt? Yes. He was there, but immediately after the death of Solomon, he returned to his own country. Now he speaks. King, I shall speak to you honestly. We had to work very hard for your father. We had to pay such high taxes. It was really too heavy. Now we have come together to ask of you in a friendly way, if you will not make us work so hard, and to relieve us from paying so much taxes. Will you make our burdens lighter? It has become breathlessly quiet. Everyone is waiting for an answer from Rehoboam. Will he listen to them? Rehoboam thinks for a moment and then says, I cannot give you an answer immediately. I must first calmly think about it. Come again after 3 days, and I will give you an answer. They all agree to this. They will wait 3 days. That was intelligent of Rehoboam, children. Do you also do that? If you get into difficult problems, wait a few days and ask other people for advice. Rehoboam does this. First, he goes to the older and wiser men who had been with his father and had heard the wisdom of Solomon, learning much therefrom. What must I do? He asks them. Speak with the people in a friendly manner, they advise him. Give in to them for a while, and they will be obedient to you. Make an effort to win the favor of the people. That is wise advice, Rehoboam. You must listen to it. But, Rehoboam thinks, I shall ask my friends also. I shall ask my young advisers. I also would like to know what they will say. They answer him, "Will you give in to those people? You must never do that. You must show that you are king. Above all, you must not be afraid, for you must let them see that you do not fear them." Rehoboam also feels the same. They must not think they can play with him. They must not think he is a weakling. 3 days later, the people come back. "You complain about my father," scornfully sounds his voice. "But wait, I will make things much worse. I shall make you work much harder. I shall make you pay a great deal more taxes. I am the king, and not you. What do you think?" Oh, how foolish, how exceedingly foolish of Rehoboam. Let us see what takes place. For a moment it is quiet. Then a loud cry is heard. The people are furious. "We will no longer recognize you as our king," they cry angrily. "We will choose another king for ourselves. We will no longer have anything to do with you." A dangerous rebellion breaks out. They walk away in anger. Rehoboam frightens exceedingly. He did not expect anything like this. He makes an effort to rectify this mistake. For that purpose, he sends Adoram, the man who always gathered the taxes from the people for Solomon. Adoram goes to these people to talk things over with them. Another foolish move, because the Israelites have a hatred against Adoram. When he comes to them, he is stoned and killed by the embittered people. Rehoboam notices that the people are furious and that it is impossible to talk to them anymore. It is too dangerous for him to remain in Shechem. It could be that in a little while they will stone him too. He must try to leave Shechem as quickly as possible before it is too late. He climbs into his chariot and flees to Jerusalem. The inhabitants of the tribe of Judah remain faithful to Rehoboam, for they do not take part in the rebellion. Rehoboam calls them to the battle and gathers together his army. He will punish the rebels. He will force them into obedience. But just then a prophet comes to meet him and says, "You must not do that, king. The Lord forbids you. There is nothing that you can do, because the Lord has directed everything to happen this way." Happily, Rehoboam listens to the prophet. He returns. The 10 tribes, who do not recognize Rehoboam as their king, desire Jeroboam to be their king. So, from now on, there are 2 kings reigning over Israel. Jeroboam reigns in Shechem over 10 tribes. Rehoboam reigns in Jerusalem over 2 tribes. The words of the old prophet Ahijah are being fulfilled.